We're also joined by Scott McKay, political analyst for the Publix Radio. Hi there, Scott.
Good morning, everyone.
Speaker Mattiello, you say you're working to develop new policies and procedures for reviewing state house-related claims of sexual harassment. Should this effort be put outside the Joint Committee on Legislative Services, which you effectively control, so there's not any question of political influence about it?
I mean, we're looking at that right now. I don't know that you need to do that. The more you go outside of your current systems, the more expensive it is. And that's just the reality of it. We have systems, checks and balances in place. So we'll probably be within those checks and balances. But it's the kind of office that has independence. If there's an allegation and there's any credibility to it, can you imagine anybody trying to get in the middle of that? Everybody's going to be hands off. You just need an honest process to look at these things and have a report. The question is, when that investigation is done, what's the next step?
We're getting close to the new House session in January. When will you meet with the members of the House Commission that last year developed bills meant to discourage or reduce sexual harassment?
Well, I've never met with commission members of any commission, so I'm not anticipating meeting with these commission members unless there's a particularized need. But we'll take the legislation and it'll go through our process. And, you know, I'm hoping that we have a lot of conversation and collaboration and input from outside groups. What I've always said is when you're dealing with bills that have impact on legal issues and have legal consequences, you have to talk to the court system. You have to talk to the business community. You've got to see how they interact with other laws. So as long as that conversation is thoroughly vetted and we know what the impact of things are, then we can move forward with some of these bills.
Let's go to Scott.
You know, I wonder some of your problems with women legislators, couldn't you curb them if you simply let codifying the Roe v. Wade Supreme Court decision, make it part of state law, put that up for a vote? What are you afraid of? Why not just let it go to a vote?
I'm certainly not afraid of it. And, you know, I just want to, the characterization, we have a group of women that have certain objections, and we'll continue to work with that group of women. But the rest of the women in the chamber are very supportive of me. So I get along with most women in the universe. You know, I mean, most women are very friendly with me and we have a great relationship and there's not an issue. There is a group of women, some are politically motivated, some are issue motivated, that have certain concerns and we'll deal with them. The Roe v. Wade issue is something that I believe has a lot of public support. I've said recently that I'm aware that a lot of people are sensitive to this issue. I've always taken the position that I don't believe the United States Supreme Court is going to overturn it, and I still believe that's correct. But having said that, I think there's a lot of sensitivity around this issue, and I respect that. Whenever there's sensitivity to an issue and it bothers particularly a large group of people, I'm very sensitive to that. So we're going to have our discussions regarding that next year. And I have said I am not making that decision alone, but I fully expect to collaborate with all of my colleagues from the perspective that I'm aware that a majority of our citizens support doing that.
On election night, you said you were introducing a new media policy and that you'd be speaking more with some media outlets and less with others. How will you determine your approach to different media organizations?
Maybe I don't talk to you. No, just joking. No, I don't have a new media policy. That evening, I was frustrated by particular reporting. I had the adrenaline running from just receiving the results of my victory, and I was given a speech to my supporters. So I made that particular statement. There is no new policy. I will say this, Ian. I've been probably the most, and I leave it to you to prove me wrong, but I've probably been the most accessible speaker the state has ever had, and I don't anticipate changing that in any way.
I would agree. You've been very accessible, and we appreciate that.
The most of any speaker?
I haven't been here in previous centuries.
I believe that would be true, and I do not anticipate changing that statement. I want to communicate more with our citizens rather than less.
Just wondering, on competition, I think it's wise when you talk about making sure that our tax regimes are within the same orbit as Massachusetts, say, who we compete with for business, obviously. But how about on wages? The minimum wage in Massachusetts is about a dollar an hour more than it is in Rhode Island. Don't Rhode Island workers deserve an increase in the minimum wage to be more competitive with Massachusetts?
I would have to agree with that statement. I've always said you have to look at the cost side of an equation as well as the living wage side, the revenue side of an equation. I've always looked at what our neighbors are doing, particularly Connecticut and Massachusetts. We're probably between them right now, which is probably a decent place to be. But as they go up, we look at going up.
One of the gripes we sometimes hear about the legislature is that too many bills get passed in the final week or two of session. Would you support moving forward the deadline for introducing bills and amendments?
I would consider that. You know, at the end of the day, the House passes the bills they're interested in, and we spread those throughout the session once the committee hearings are done on them. You can't do them right away because you've got to gear up your committees. You've got to give the public notice and a chance to come in and testify on all the bills. So you're not going to do them on day two. But you do them as soon as you can. You get them through committee. You have your internal process in the House, and the Senate does the same thing. And you pass out what your chamber's interested in passing out. Later in the session, you start talking to the members of the leadership and the members of the other chamber, and their view is different than yours. So then you start having conversations and collaboration, and you start passing each other's bills because of the discussions that are going on. That's why a lot of them get passed later in the session. But the House bills that we passed that we're originally interested in passing, they get passed pretty early on.
You know, you look around at economic development, one of the things we see from Amazon, I mean, some of us have to laugh a little bit, you know, they go through this intergalactic search and they end up with New York City and Washington, D.C. But I think there are some lessons. One thing we're seeing is the new 21st century innovation jobs are not going to low-cost places, low taxes, right-to-work states. They're going to places with high-educated workers. And how does Rhode Island, how does your plan fit in with getting us more into that lane?
It's investing more into education and job training. And this is an area that we have to be very thankful to Governor Raimondo. Job training has been a focus of hers. I've been very supportive of every initiative for job training. Our higher education system, K-12 and higher education, we have to prop those systems up. We have to invest more in those because you're correct. Quality of life, education, the quality of your workforce is going to determine your success in the future.
Now, one thing, you've thrown some cold water already on the governor's plan to expand what's now the free tuition at CCRI to RIC, Rhode Island College, and the University of Rhode Island, where I know your son graduated engineering from. So is there a way to compromise that?
Yes, and I don't necessarily want to throw cold water on it. I would love to be able to do all things for all people. What I've suggested is that you have to protect the integrity of the institution. So the great institution that my son had access to at a reasonable cost, future generations have access to. I am a little concerned, and I'm not saying I'm opposed to, but I'm a little concerned with the state being able to solely keep up with the investment in the education system and those institutions and underfunding them. So then you end up with institutions that nobody wants to go to, and what good is that if it's free? So, you know, you have to look at everything. The governor is on the right track in terms of making education more accessible to more people, and I fully support her, but we have practical realities that we have to deal with. So I look forward to having that discussion with her and seeing what we can do and matching that against the constraints of next year's budget and the next few years' budgets.
Speaker Mattiello, you seemed a little bit surprised when some of the reporters who spoke with you after your caucus last week asked whether any of the 21 representatives who voted against you would be punished. But we know during your time as Speaker, there have been representatives who've had their committee assignments changed after doing something that you might have not agreed with. So will these 21 reps who voted against you during the caucus last week be punished?
No, absolutely not. Nobody will be punished. I look forward to working with each and every one of them, and I'm looking forward to bringing some of them aboard onto the team. So nobody will be punished. But, you know, I'm going to put together a team that is supportive and that I can work with and that shares the same value. So that's not punishment. But, you know, I fully intend to work collaboratively with everybody. If you've looked at my policies and my practices long term, it's always forward looking. You always want to work together with people because you have tomorrow's work to do and you have to get things done on behalf of the public.
Finally, one more question before we let you go. Your campaign defined some of your opponents in the previous election season as ultra progressives. How do you define what an ultra progressive is?
Well, I would define it as, folks that have an extreme polar left-leaning viewpoint, and that's the herd they run in, and they don't deviate. It's just very, very left. I think some progressive issues are great. I've always said that. I think some conservative issues are great. I think that most people should think along the full spectrum, and every issue gets determined differently, and at least that's the way I think. You know, these folks band together because of a particular ideal or an ideology and not necessarily taking all factors into account. That's how I refer to those folks. And because I'm moderate in thinking sometimes, as well as progressive in thinking sometimes, you know, they vilify me. That's not necessarily being thoughtful, and it's being ultra progressive.
All right, that's all the time we have. Thanks for joining us, Scott.
Great to be here.
And Rhode Island House Speaker Nicholas Mattiello.
Thank you. Nice to be here.